Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you from beautiful Pueblo, Colorado on the 15th of December, 2009. With the holiday season upon us, all members of our Movie Addict Headquarters gang, including producer extraordinaire Nikki Starr and our talented co-host Jazz Shaw, are here to salute a classic holiday film, one that's even more popular now than when it was first released in 1983. Like millions of movie fans, I enjoy A Christmas Story every time I see it, and believe me, I've watched it many, many times. Happily, our special guests are Julie Matthews and Zach Ward from the original film, as well as Mad Movie Man, film critic A.J. Hockery, one of our regular guests. Zach played the scary redheaded bully in the original movie, and we'll hear from him later in the show. Julie was one of the carolers, but she also helped with casting, I believe, finding extras for A Christmas Story, and she's on the line now. It's my great pleasure to welcome her to Movie Addict Headquarters. Hi, Julie. Thanks for being one of our guests today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I welcome talking about A Christmas Story. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and I think it's a fabulous film, and I think everybody should see it.
I think you're right. We'll find out.
I think everyone who lives on the planet Earth should see the movie.
I agree with you, and we may have to face that particular problem a little later on in the show. But I wanted to know, how did you happen to become involved in this wonderful movie?
Well, as a young actress in the mid-80s, I had just come back from New York City. I had studied acting at Lee Strasberg Actors Studio and HB Studio in New York, and I was a budding young actress, and that's what I had my sights on as a career choice. And when I heard that they were going to make a movie in Cleveland, I got all excited, and I did what I needed to do to submit myself. And I am a vocalist, so I kind of travel in vocal circles, and there were notices, that went out for singers. And I did get cast as a caroler, and as I was got called to come on the set to be in that big opening scene. The opening scene of the movie is in downtown Cleveland at Public Square, where they converted the Public Square to an old-fashioned, looked like my childhood. And the casting woman, a big portion of the movie was also filmed in Canada, and a lot of the crew people were Canadian. So she was running around like crazy because there really weren't enough people. The crowd scene wasn't big enough, and they needed bodies and they needed people. So she was running around like a crazy woman, and she was just very flustered. And she was the person I was dealing with as an extra, as a, person that was there, as an extra. And I just kind of stopped her. She was like running, and I said, "Excuse me." And I got right in her face, and I said, "Do you need some help?" And she said, "Are you from Cleveland?" I said, "Yeah." She goes, "Do you know where I can get a bunch of actors?" I go, "Yeah," because I had, been doing theater for, a few years, and I knew all the theaters, and, I knew all the actors in town because they all did theater back then. And I said, "Sure." And she said, "Then come with me." And she put me in the casting office, and I sat, for a couple days making telephone calls. And I realized that I loved being on that side of the telephone. You know, it's very hard for an actor to be sitting at home, and, you know, Zach Ward can certainly, you know, confirm this. It's hard for an actor to be sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring to tell you you got a part in a movie. It was much more fun being in the casting department, calling people and telling them they come to get to be in a movie. So I love that little bit of power. And it changed the course of my career. I realized that day that I did not want to be an actor. I wanted to be on the other side of the telephone. And I did the, you know, extras casting for the Cleveland portions of A Christmas Story. And, you know, the rest is history because I've been a casting director ever since. And I have, you know, a pretty extensive casting profile.
Well, you certainly do.
Yeah.
I mean, you the things that you've done since Christmas Story,
mm-hmm.
it's one of the most impressive resumes that I've seen. My gosh, you.
Well, I'm certainly not I'm not a Janet Hirshenson, I'm not in that group of Hollywood casting directors. But you know, for someone who has never been in Hollywood or needed to, you know, live in Hollywood, I think I've done pretty well in the casting realm. And I do a lot of casting and working in films in Canada as well.
Well, good for you. I mean, it's just a special treat to have you on the show. And it's also great that the Mad Movie Man could join us again. As we were saying before the show began, Julie, AJ is a very tough critic. But I think he loves A Christmas Story almost as I do. AJ, hi. Do you have a favorite scene from A Christmas Story?
Hi, Betty Jo. Thanks for having me on again. And it's really hard to pick one of my favorite scenes from A Christmas Story because the movie, for me, just works as a whole. The whole thing is one singular being that is just so good and so memorable. But for like a scene that kind of stands out for me, and I don't know really why, but it's the scene where they go, where Ralphie's parents and Ralphie, they go looking for a Christmas tree. And I just love that whole exchange between the Christmas tree man and the parents, and they're just going back and forth and bargaining. And it's just this funny little scene, and it exemplifies the movie's skill and how it can make a scene of just going to get a Christmas tree just exciting and fun, just enjoyable to watch. It's a testament to that movie's talent.
I like that scene, too. It was just every little movement by each actor, even the guy that was selling the trees, perfect. It was just absolutely perfect. And it's always such fun having you here on the show, AJ. And, of course, we're fortunate to have Nikki and Jazz here to help with the show as usual. Nikki, are all systems go in our chat room?
Yes, ma'am, they are. We are very glad to have you back.
Well, we're all very happy to be back. We've missed having shows because of, I think it was a BTR flu that was going around or something. So it is great to be back. And I want to thank the people who signed up for the chat and to all our other listeners. And I hope everyone enjoys the show. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Jazz is also here, but we've saved him for last to introduce because we are a little bit upset with him right now, and I'm going to let Jazz explain. He's got some explaining to do. So, Jazz, you're on.
You know, I was going to feel terrible, but after all of the abuse, I have to say I'm not feeling so bad anymore. Yes, it is true. I am possibly one of the only people in America who has never seen the film A Christmas Story. I have watched, you know how many movies I watch. I have a humongous library. I watch them on TV. I love the classics. Probably every other Christmas film you could name I've seen. I have never, ever caught this film. But I'm excited to hear about it. I understand, just to start off with the first question, it's about a bank robbery of some sort and Santa Claus rescues the hostages?
You see, Julie, are you going to set him straight on that? What do you have to say to Jazz about that?
I said what I had to say to Jazz. I can't even believe he lives on the planet Earth since 1983. Well, he may not. I mean, I don't know how old Jazz is. He might have been born after, you know, not been on the planet since 1983. But Even so.
In 1983, I was already retired from the military, my dear.
Okay. Here's what I want to tell you. Here's what I want to say to Jazz and anyone else who's out there who's a who, you know, I'm sure they're not listening to your show unless they are a movie fan, a movie addict, a movie person. And I would say that anyone who has not seen A Christmas Story will, especially if you're a guy, because I consider A Christmas Story a guy's movie. I think men and boys, they really, really love this movie. This is a guy's flick. You know how they say this is a chick flick? This is definitely not, A Christmas Story is not a chick flick. It's a guy's flick. And men love this movie. And you are really, really needing to see it because it's just, it's, well, I'm going to save my answer because one of the questions that you had for me, I'll come back to it. And tell you the reason why I think you need to see it so badly. But it is an answer to a to another question later.
Well, I think you've pretty well set the record straight here with Jazz. And I almost envy Jazz because he's in for a real treat.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So wouldn't it be great to see it for the first time? I mean, knowing how great it is.
Yeah.
So, Jazz, we're going to let you stay on the show because we do love you, and I know you have some questions for Julie about A Christmas Story, even though you haven't seen it. So what would you like to know, first and foremost?
I don't know. I just feel so bad now. I feel like crawling away into a shell somewhere and hiding.
No, you don't have to hide. You don't have to hide. Just watch the movie because, really, you if you love movies, you are going to love this movie. This is it's delicious. That's all.
Well, we better kick off the questions. But in my own defense, I will say, Betty Jo, I still meet people of various ages to this day who have never seen Casablanca. And you tell me which movie is more famous. So, I don't know.
Nobody's perfect.
Exactly.
Jazz.
Nobody's perfect. Everybody, you know, has those little spots. But
I'll let you go, Jazz, because I've never seen Gone with the Wind. I've never seen it.
Really? Wow.
We are uncovering some very horrible
secrets
here today.
I know. The entire cast is getting into this whole, gestalt of just releasing.
Confessions.
You took part in this film, and obviously I am aware exactly of how much a classic it is. So give us share with us some of your favorite memories of doing it.
Fondest memories. I would have to say that probably the fondest memory I have is just walking into Public Square and seeing what they did with it to recreate, a nostalgic, late 40s, 50s kind of vibe. Because I won't give my age away, but it looked just like my childhood. You know, my mother worked at Hallie's in Public Square when I was a child, and she brought me to see Santa Claus to downtown Cleveland, to Public Square. It was all lit up. You know, Higbee's had their, that window. It was very nostalgic, and it really brought back my childhood. And it was just so delightful to see it just like it was when I was a kid. And one of my favorite parts of the movie is when he walks up to see Santa Claus and the set, the way the set looked with Santa Claus way up on that thing, and it was just so magical and so mysterious and so scary and overwhelming and intimidating. And they really, the set designers just really recreated exactly how a Cleveland downtown department store used to make Santa Claus. It was very intimidating for children. It was scary, but it was very exciting, and it was very magical and wonderful. And with the way they bring him up the stairs kids are like, scared. And because it was kind of like that. I remember that. And so when I watched the movie and when I was there, you know, in the filming of it, it was like, wow, this is very, you know, brings you back to, you know, the 50s, you know, being a kid, you know, or, I mean, I wasn't a kid in the 50s, but it had that feeling to it. And
I know.
Very, very nostalgic feeling. And that's probably my fondest memory of the movie, is just being a part of recreating my childhood, basically.
And they did a very good job of the details, the period details, mm-hmm. in that
yep.
film.
Yep.
I was very impressed with that. AJ, what would you like to ask Julie to start out with?
I had a question about the movie's director, Bob Clark, who, as a lot of viewers might not know, was actually a very versatile director, because before Christmas Story, he was responsible for the 80s comedy Porky's, and then back in the 70s, he did the original Black Christmas, which a lot of people which came out before Halloween, that a lot of people consider like the grandfather of the modern slasher movie. But Julie, from your standpoint, how did Bob Clark, how did his style help the performances come through?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I that might be a better question for Zach, because honestly, I really wasn't in on that. And I think Bob Clark is a genius, and I think every single aspect, you know, a director is the director of the movie. They control every aspect of the film. And I think the genius of a great filmmaker is that he surrounds himself with people that really, really get it and know what they're doing and know how to get his vision on screen. And he surrounded himself with really great people, with people that did perfect casting. He surrounded himself with great set designers and you know, great cinematography and great sound composers, and so every aspect of the film is, in my mind, perfect, because it's, you know, he surrounded himself with really great people. As far as getting performances from the actors, that's probably a better question. Well, I don't know if that's actually what you asked me, but to get wonderful performances and directing the actors, I really wasn't in on that part of it, but certainly as a casting director and a producer of films, you know, 25 years later, I know that, you know, he was pretty very good at it. But I think the way the movie translates on screen and its popularity and why it's already a classic film is because he really surrounded himself with really great people that really knew how to get what he needed to get done.
I think you're right about that. And
yeah.
And we will hear Zach talk about working with Bob Clark in just a few minutes. And he really is very complimentary about that filmmaker, just as you are, Julie. AJ, do you have another question for Julie?
I do, about the, because Christmas Story, when it first came out, it was a fairly modest hit, and as the years went by, the audience grew and grew. And the past few years, there have been, like, conventions and meetings and such. So what was your reaction to serving as a panelist last year at the movie's reunion?
Well, the one thing, I was a little surprised at, you know, how many people traveled from so many parts of the world, you know, that loved this movie. Now, I happen to know, because I go to Canada quite a bit, it is a huge, huge favorite in Canada. And I'm talking about not just in, like, Toronto or, you know, more, but in the French cities of Canada, like Montreal and Quebec City. These people love this movie. And even though a lot of them don't even speak English, that, you know, it's got a universal appeal, this film. So I already know that its popularity is definitely there. But what I was surprised about was how many people traveled from so many different parts of the world to come to this convention to, you know, catch just a piece of the Christmas Story action and get a glimpse of, you know, an actor that they loved, or, you know, to hear some inside stories. And it was wonderful for me to, you know, reconnect with some of the people, because I was young, you know. I mean, I was a young actor, and I was thrilled to be there, but I was really kind of stuck in a casting office. So, you know, I didn't get a chance to really get to know any of them. So it was really nice to be able to actually sit down with them and get to know them a little bit. I really enjoyed meeting the musical composers.
That must have been a fun
yeah,
event.
Yeah, Carl and Paul, you know.
Mm-hmm. But are they planning any other reunions that you know about, or conventions?
I don't know. They were doing it in Cleveland every year.
Oh, wow. And they had the house that the Parkers lived in. I think
that's
a treasure there.
On. Yeah, that's the museum, the store. The house now is a museum, so you can go through it, and they have little tours, and you can see, you know, the whole house inside. They've tried to recreate it. You know, I don't know if you know the history of it, but Brian Jones, who made the leg lamp, he bought the house, and
he
gutted it. Yeah, and he gutted it, and he's from California, and he tried to map it out to look like, you know, the design of it to look like it looked in the movie. So
I wonder if that's the same house that everyone is talking about in the chat right now with the museum, and they have, like, the leg lamp in the window and things. So.
Right. The house that's in the movie, the front of the house, the outside, the exterior shots, is the house that's in Cleveland, okay? The inside of the house, no, that's not that house. But that's what I'm saying. Brian just bought the house, and then he wanted to do tours through the house, and he has a lot of items from the film that are on display inside the house, you know, that are actual pieces from the movie. But he acquired those and put them in the house. But the inside of the house was not the house that's in the movie.
Now, you touched
on this
a little bit already in terms of deciding what side of the camera you want to be in, what aspect of the production process. But, you know, how do you think that particular movie affected your career in other ways, as far as balancing acting versus production work and things like that?
Well, like I said, it definitely changed the course of my career, absolutely. I mean, I would have probably, you know, I don't know, at some point in my career I probably would have moved into the casting arena, because I was always kind of good at that, even in acting class. My teacher used to, as soon as the scene was over, my teacher would look at me and say, "Julie, what did you think?" You know, so I kind of always knew that I had more of a director's side, or more of a you know, coaching, acting coaching side, which is what casting directors have to do anyway when they're casting, is do a lot of directing. So, but it, you know, having had the opportunity to do it at such a young age, to work in casting, it did change the course of my career. I knew that day when I was sitting in their office that's it. I don't want to be an actor anymore, even though I just went to New York and studied and spent all my money and lived in New York and struggled. I don't want to do that. This is what I want to do. I want to do this. This is what I like. So, yeah.
Well, you've been an agent, too. You've been an agent, a
mm-hmm.
vocalist, a model,
yeah.
a TV director, a publicist, writer, talent scout, and you've even appeared on screen in such movies as Major League and Robert Roberts. How do you find time also to direct the American Performing Arts Network? You are a busy lady.
I know. Well, I'm an entrepreneur. You know, just like, well, really like any struggling actor, and everybody, you know, all actors, they never know where their next job is. You know, we just kind of go wherever there's work and whenever there's work, and, you know, we have a schedule, and, you know, you, like when you emailed me, "Can you do it this day?" I put it on the calendar. You know, it's like, that's how we have to work, you know.
And you were very efficient at that, too. Chaz mentioned the chat, and we haven't had a chance to check with Nikki to see, to give us a report about what's going on in the chat room. Nikki, anything else you'd like to share with Julie and AJ from the chat room?
Well, we just had the funnest conversation about the leg lamp. And of course that I want one so bad. I've always wanted one. And then we went, there was people in the chat room saying that their fathers tell them how much the movie reminds them of when they were growing up, that they got it exactly right on for things when they were growing up, which I thought was awesome.
Absolutely.
And then, yes, and then just the fact that it's the kind of movie that is good for everybody. It's a funny movie. It's good for guys. It's good for girls. It's good for kids. I just love the movie.
And everyone
and every
in
mother
also
has,
seemed to agree that I was an abomination against mankind, if that's any
it's
consolation.
It's true.
So.
And everybody told him where he could watch it everywhere and how he hasn't seen it. Is, but it's such a movie that you're going to like because of your sense of humor.
I get no kickback from the museum, a Christmas Story museum store, but I can tell you that the house that is, you know, on the tour in Cleveland, if you go to see the house, right across the street from the house, they bought that house and turned it into a Christmas Story museum store, which I'm sure you can, you know, find these things online as well from the museum store. But if you love the leg lamp, they have everything leg lamp. They have the leg lamp game. They
so
have
great.
The leg lamp itself in all different sizes. You could buy from a full-size one to a little nightlight of the leg lamp. You could buy a jigsaw puzzle. They have tons of leg lamp merchandise. And Brian Jones, he built the leg lamp. He created it. So, you know, there's lots of leg lamps out there to be had if you want one and you love it and you want one in your house. And believe me, I get no kickback from the store to say this. I'm not trying to sell it. I'm just saying if there's fans out there who want a leg lamp, they're definitely out there to have.
That's good.
That's
good news. I think we all
and then
want
one
a
other
leg
thing,
lamp.
Every yes, I know I do, but every boy, and I don't know, it might be girls too, but everybody said their mom said, you can't have a BB gun, you'll shoot your eye out. Every mother has said that.
Every mother definitely has said that at one time.
I have to say the most daring piece of Christmas Story memorabilia I have. I have the Christmas Story Monopoly edition.
Oh, gee, you're so lucky. I'm so jealous.
And it's not coming out of the box. It's staying right where it is.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Well, before we get into hearing from Zach on his taped interview, we do have time for one more question for Julie. AJ, I think you had another question you wanted to ask her.
Yeah, Julie, can you tell us a bit about your current project, Supernatural?
Well, we're currently just trying to get funded, you know, as any filmmaker, you know, struggling filmmaker who has a wonderful script and a celebrity cast, and we have a website, and we filmed a trailer. The trailer on the website, it looks like we filmed the movie, but we didn't. We just filmed a trailer, and we did that to solicit private investors because we want it to be an independent film, but we are talking to several. We are talking to several production companies right now that we hope will come on board, and so we're just out there trying to get it into production. But in the meantime, anybody that is interested in it can go look at www.supernaturalmovie.com. And I want to emphasize that Supernatural spelled S-O-U-P, like the soup that you eat or slurp, whatever you do with soup. And that's because the movie is about a soup miracle and a miracle with soup. And so it's called Soup. And the website is supernaturalmovie.com, and you can watch the trailer. And you can keep updated on that.
That's gonna
but
be fun.
I would like to say definitely in closing that I think that A Christmas Story, I think it's so widely popular and will remain a classic forever is because it is a timeless story, and it's a story that everybody can relate to. Every kid who's ever wanted that certain thing for Christmas, which it's, you know, a lot of people, they know what that was like. And this kid just, you know, he captured it.
I know. He did.
And the writer
captured
it, and the director captured it, and the music captured it, and the cinematographer captured it. And I'm working on this is another little piece of information that you might be interested in. I wrote another script that is takes place during Christmas. It's not really a Christmas story, but it takes place during Christmas. And I am currently, I'm convinced that this is absolutely a script for the little group of filmmakers that is Peter Billingsley, Vince Vaughn, and John Favreau. So this is going to them. This script.
Great,
that I
and
we're going to
send you good vibes on that. And I hope you'll come back and talk with us about your other exciting project.
Yeah, I need all of your listeners. Because, you know, if anybody who's a Peter Billingsley fan knows all these movies he's been in, and without credit, without screen credit, I don't know why he does that, but he's like some of these films, he just wants to be kind of like under the radar, and it's kind of funny, but this group of guys, you know, they make these movies, and I have a script for them, so... If your readers are just put it out there, you know, and send the good vibes my way.
Well, we certainly will do that, and you've been a terrific guest today. We do want to make sure that we get to hear from Zach. And can you will you be able to stay with us during Zach's interview?
No, I have another meeting to go to, so I'm going to cut out and. But is Zach live or you
no? He's it's
live.
A tape. It's a taped interview.
Okay.
So when you hear the you'll listen to the show when we send you the link to the archive and you'll be able to hear it. But thank you again for being on our show and best
Thanks
wishes and happy holidays to you, Julie. You've been
thank
a great
you,
guest.
Thank you. Too. Enjoy.
Take care, Julie.
And Jazz.
Yes, ma'am.
What are you going to do tonight when you get home?
Actually, I'm already home, and I'll.
What are you
going to
do when you get off the phone? You're going to go to the video store and you're going to rent A Christmas Story and watch it.
I never go to the video store. I'm a Netflix baby.
Okay,
order
it.
Netflix.
Order it. Order it now.
Jazz, you can borrow my LaserDisc copy. I'll send it to you.
That's okay. It's an exchange because I was just getting my Christmas present for you ready and had. Gotten the address just jotted down because I'm sending you my own copy of Iron Man and also of Hancock, so I enjoyed that.
We're getting into some sibling quarrels here, Julie, but thank you again for being on the show, and bye for now.
Critical
thank you.
Bye, Julie.
Okay. Bye. Oh, she
and
was.
And by the way, it's just so you know, she was awesome, and Jazz, A Christmas Story streams on Netflix.
Right, so he has no excuse, and he'll want to see it even more after he hears Zach. Now, I want to tell our listeners that we did extend the time of today's show because we weren't sure how long it was going to run, and we do have an hour for the show, so we're going to listen to Zach's interview now, and I think we'll have some time to talk a little bit about that after the interview. So if I can work this correctly, this should play Zach Ward's taped interview.
And I'll
I'm
stick
so
around after
happy
that as long as I'm
that
not fired.
Zach Ward agreed to be part of our tribute to A Christmas Story because who can forget the villain Farkas? And that's the part that Zach played. He's one of my favorite characters in The Christmas Story. And he's here on the line right now. I want to bring him on. Hi, Zach. Welcome to Movie Attic Headquarters.
Hi. How are you?
Well, I'm just fine. I'm just so happy that you could be with us. And you have been such a busy person since back in 1983. I was looking up on Internet Movie Database. You've got over 80 films and TV appearances to your credit since then, and I know how hard it was to get in touch with you. You're shooting for a Dollhouse now, is that correct?
Yeah, we're doing the final episode of the entire series. It's pretty exciting, actually.
Well, that particular show has really gotten a lot of fans, and it's very, very interesting. So, and you're in, you were in a movie that's my producer's favorite. You were in Transformers, is that correct?
Yeah, I played Sergeant Donnelly in the
Sergeant
first Transformers.
Sergeant Donnelly. Well,
yeah, before
Nikki,
I got by Scorponok.
Yeah. Well, Nikki is going to be really, really excited to hear about that. And but the main reason that we wanted to talk with you today was, of course, to get your reactions to being a part of the movie A Christmas Story, which is just, as far as I'm concerned, the best movie ever made for Christmas. And I wondered, how did you get the role of Farkas?
Well, when part of it was shot in Toronto, Canada. And I was from Toronto, and I auditioned against 300-400 other kids, and it went down from 300 down to 150, down to 100, down to 80, down to 50, down to 20, down to 10, down to 5, down to me. So it was audition, 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 and I was like a little kid, and I had never done I'd done commercials, but I had never done a movie before, and then I got
How
the
old
part.
Were you? How old were
I
you
was,
then?
I was 13.
13.
Yeah, I was 13 years old, and so then I get the job, and it's very exciting, and we do wardrobe, and then we go to the location out in, I think it was in Cleveland, and I had met the guy Yano Anaya, who played Grover Dill, and you know, I were hanging out a bit, and then we were putting on they put our wardrobe on us. And they took us out to see Bob Clark. And this, for me, was the first time I met Bob Clark, because I had been auditioning in Toronto, not in California where he lived. So all the auditions had been via tape. And then I'm standing in front of Bob with Yano and Naya, and the wardrobe mistress puts her hand over me and puts her hand over Yano and says, "This is your Skip Farkas, this is your Grover Dill." And I guess that was the first time Bob had noticed that, or had seen the size difference, and noticed that I was probably about 9 inches taller than Yano. So he looks at me, and he looks at Yano, and he goes, okay, you get his lines, he gets yours.
He switched
it right there. So Skeet Farkas was originally, in the script, Grover Dill's toady, and then he got flipped that Grover Dill was Skeet Farkas' toady.
Oh my gosh! Well, that was a sort of a blessing for you, wasn't it, to get this role?
Well,
yes, and
you know, it was honestly, if you look at how the two of us, if you look at the film, you see the two of us trying to flip those roles back the other way. I don't know. I think maybe because I had the braces and the slanty eyes and the evil looking face. I think I made a more terrifying bully, and it just worked out great. Right? But it was genuinely like a moment of ephemera that pretty much changed my life.
I guess it did, and you certainly were a memorable villain in this movie. But what's your most vivid memory about working on A Christmas Story?
Working with Bob Clark. With him directing me and going over scenes. I mean, that was the first film I'd ever done, and I didn't know how to be a film actor. And Bob was so genuine and comfortable with kids, he himself being a father, that he would treat us like little professionals that needed to do their job and needed to earn the respect of the set and the crew by being professional. Not unkindly so, but stern, strong, direct. And if I messed up a line, Bob would come over and go, "Okay, let's run that again. Say it again." And I'd say the line, and go, "Okay, good, say it again. Good, say it again. Say it again. What was that line? Say it again. Okay." And they did that with me, so I was saying without even thinking about it, and I lost my nerves, and I was comfortable. He's like, "You're doing a great job. Stay focused and get it done. Thank you." And then when I did finish the scene, and it worked out great, and I was a little kid, I was 13, so when I got my focus going, and he'd come over and give me a big hug and go, "That was awesome. Way to go. Nice job." And you really, he inspired the actors, the young actors, through helping them want to do the best job they could, as there was no yelling at anybody, but there was also no pandering to childishness. There was no pandering to, like, "Oh, did baby want to have a blanket?" It was, "You're a professional, do your job." And it was a standard that I've maintained throughout the rest of my life.
Must have been wonderful to work with, and how great that he did know how to work with youngsters, because there were so many of them in that film. Was he that way with everyone?
Yep.
Every one of the youngsters?
Yeah, he was just great. He was such a sweet, kind man, and so passionate about what he did, and so big-hearted. He's very much missed.
Well, he certainly directed a masterpiece as far as I'm concerned, and it was absolutely perfect casting. And I can't help asking you, Zach, about your real-life relationship with Peter Billingsley, who played Ralphie, of course. My goodness, you were bitter enemies in that movie, and the fights, the fight scenes were so believable. What were your, did you know him before, or did you meet him?
No.
And what kind of relationship did you have off the set?
Well, I didn't know any of the other kids, because everybody else but me was from Los Angeles. I knew who Peter was because he was on That's Incredible, and he was also the kid from the Messy Marvin commercials. And so, of course, I had seen him. But I had never met any of them before, or Scotty Schwartz from The Toy and Kidco.
Uh-huh.
So actually, we were just a bunch of kids having fun. And off set, we all hung out and played together.
Is that right?
Yeah, we would run around the hotel in Cleveland causing problems and try not to get in trouble for it. The big joke was always to send we would order room service for other people's rooms. Fine. Yeah. We got along great. There was none of that sort of method acting where I was the bully and therefore I was going to hate everybody. No, I was just a 13-year-old kid having a lot of fun and getting to play. So we got along great, and then everybody went their separate ways. I saw Scotty. I started to be friends again with Scotty Schwartz probably about 15, 16 years ago. And then when I moved to Los Angeles from Toronto, I met up with Scotty again, and Peter again, and RD, and Yano Anaya, who played Grover. I met up with him probably about 5 years ago. And it's funny, and Ian Petrello, who played Randy, we tour the country. We do these sort of appearances every Christmas, and we raise money for the Boys and Girls Foundation in different cities. And it's been, we do that over Thanksgiving and maybe into the beginning of the December month, and it's become a tradition with us that is really fun, because you're spending time with people that you've known for 27 years, and
a
lot of people. Yeah, and especially as an actor, as a child actor, growing up and having shared experiences and being able to relate to one another in a way that very few people can. So it's not only been a huge part of my life as an actor, but it's also become a huge part of my life emotionally and giving me a new family.
Well, it certainly is a wonderful cause for you all to be involved in, and I just think you've done so well in terms of your acting career. And I was, as we were talking before you came on the line, that you have over 80 films and TV appearances, and then Peter, who played Ralphie, has really been busy too, especially lately. Could you tell our listeners what he's been involved in?
Well, Peter. Peter, the way that story goes, Peter was here in Los Angeles many, many years ago, and he was doing a after-school special about not using steroids. And it was one of those little shows that says at the end of it, you know, the more you know, that type of thing. And he did it, the guy who was playing opposite him was a young actor named Vince Vaughn. And he and Vince Vaughn became very close friends, and this is 25 years ago, or, yeah, 20 years ago. And so Peter and Vince Vaughn became best of buddies, and they started hanging out, and that was, they were just pals. And then as their career started going in different ways, you know, Peter was still acting, but he was actually learning from Bob Clark how to become a director. And Peter was spending his time in the editing rooms, learning how to edit films, and understand how to make movies from the inside out as opposed to just being an actor. And when Vince Vaughn did Swingers, then Peter was introduced to Jon Favreau, who was the other lead of Swingers and who was also working as becoming a director. And then Peter ended up producing a TV series with Jon Favreau on Bravo, and it was called Dinner for Five. And it was Jon Favreau interviewing four other named celebrities while they sat down and had dinner. And so Peter was producing that, and then Peter produced a movie with Vince Vaughn and Jon Favreau, which was a sequel to Swingers. And then they continued working together, and they did the film Zathura, they did Elf, they did probably did something else, I can't remember. But they ended up doing Iron Man. So
Iron Man.
Sure, everybody's aware that Iron Man did pretty okay.
It did pretty okay, and I was quite impressed with Peter's directing of Couples Retreat just this past year.
I thought you should see it.
Because it's very, very good, and I definitely want to make sure that I ask you this question, because I think I understand it, but it's interesting to get other people's opinions. Why do you think A Christmas Story is still so wildly popular? I know it's played on television practically all during the month of December, and there are just so many fans that are so wild about this movie, and I'm one of them, of course. Why do you think it's so popular still?
The reason the film is so popular is because it grows with the audience. When you're a child and you're watching the movie, you identify with the kids, and you identify with their trials and tribulations going through school, the silly stuff that they did, the competitions that they had, their desires for Christmas presents. And that's something that you relate to as a child. And when you watch the movie, you feel like you're identifying with the leads or the bully or with the sidekick or the little brother, whomever it is. And as you start getting older, if you're a child and then you're in your 20s, you reflect back on that movie as if something that you watched when you were a kid. And so it has that feeling of nostalgia and also tradition for you. But then when you start getting a little older past that, you start looking at the film as an adult watching children. And you relate to it differently because you see how you were treated by your parents and how you want to potentially treat your children. And what's interesting about that is wherever we travel, we meet people who are in their 70s, people who are in their 50s, in their 40s, their 30s, children who are 5 years old, and they all love the movie because each single one of them identifies with the movie from a different viewpoint. And the reason the film is timeless is because the theme of it is not about getting a Red Ryder BB gun. The theme is classical. And the theme is stepping into manhood, earning the respect of your father. And you can see it's symbolized by the wanting to get a Red Ryder BB gun. But what that whole film is about is on Christmas morning, after everybody's opened their presents and the old man and the mom are sitting down, and the old man looks at Ralphie and says, "Well, did you get everything you wanted for Christmas?" He says, "Kind of." And the old man says, "Well, there's always next year." And they're sitting down. He goes, "Yeah, there's next year." And the old man looks over and goes, "Oh, what's that? What's that over there?" And Ralphie looks, "Where? Is that behind the tree, that long, tall, thin box?" And Ralphie looks at the old man. The old man looks at Ralphie. And at that moment, they both know. Ralphie knows that's the gun that he wanted. And his father is saying, "I trust you, and I respect you enough to take care of this." And at that moment, Ralphie has become the man in his father's eyes enough to earn the respect and trust to have the Red Ryder BB gun. And that's why that film means something to people. Because it doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter what age you are, what color you are, what your religion is. Everybody has a family or wishes they did have a family. And everybody wants to feel as if they're respected and trusted by the people they look up to. And that moment is that moment. That's his coming of age moment. And that's why it continues to make sense, regardless of the age, regardless of the location. Because everyone has a family, whether they're born into them or they adopt them. And they're looking to be accepted and respected. And that will always be timeless.
Absolutely. What a great answer. I hadn't thought of the trust being an issue there, but you're right, and that is a universal theme. And then, of course, I think it's just such an entertaining film from beginning to end. There's not one dull minute in that entire movie. Well, I don't want to take too much more of your time, Zach. It's just been wonderful having you as a guest, but I do want to give you a chance to tell our listeners what current projects you're working on.
Well, right now I'm shooting the final episode of Dollhouse with Joss Whedon and the rest of the cast, so that's a lot of fun. And I'm in the midst of producing a movie that we're shooting in January. The film is called Last Stop, and it is a Hitchcock-style horror film shot in the Twilight Zone. I describe it as elegant terror. It will be starring Brian Austin Green, myself, Joanne Kelly, and there's some other cast that I can't talk about yet. We will be shooting in January, and we hope to be coming out at the Comic-Con next July. And it's going to be the first film that I'm producing and starring in.
I can't wait to see it. Would you come back when the film is completed and
absolutely,
you're ready to talk about it, and we can spend more time talking with you about your movie? And the title again is?
Last Stop.
Last Stop, and it's a Hitchcockian-type thriller, one of my favorite genres. So we'll definitely be looking forward to that. And we hope that you have a very, very happy holiday season, Zach. And thank you again for talking with us and being a part of this tribute to such a wonderful holiday classic.
Thank you so much. And please give me a call whenever you want.
I'll do that. Thank you again. And bye for now.
Merry Christmas.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What an interesting guy. It was so much fun talking with Zach. AJ, what did you think about some of the things that Zach mentioned?
I think Zach pretty much summed up my feelings towards the film very well in regards to what it's all about. You know, like he said, it's not about, like, just getting the present. Like, as I mentioned in the review on Real Talk Reviews that I wrote that you just posted this week, is that, like, so many holiday movies kind of get caught up in the commercialism of it all. And here, whether or not Ralphie gets the gun is almost a moot point, because the movie is just all about experiencing your childhood again through the eyes of an adult perspective. And the movie just captures that heart without ever having to force it or having to do anything overly dramatic to get your attention or your respect. It just does everything so right, and it's just such a perfect movie.
I agree with you, but now we have to find out from Jazz. Have we convinced you, Jazz, that you must see A Christmas Story? The sooner the better.
I'm going to watch it. I will do my duty. Clearly I'll have to do this, and my wife is yelling at me because even she knew about it. She was telling me she had the lamp before, you know.
And, really?
Yeah,
Good for her.
I was the only person, apparently. So, but we've been having a great time in the chat, by the way. So you should give another big thanks to Nikki.
Yes, thank you.
Still
I was thank you. I was
listening to the interview and just chatting away and having a lot of fun.
Oh, great! Well, we really do appreciate our chatters, Nikki. Anything else you'd like to share from the chatters?
We were just having such a great time, and yeah, you can just let Zach know he can call me anytime. He was in Transformers.
Being in the Transformers, you'd have a lot of questions for him about that movie, now wouldn't you?
So did that totally kill Zach's career, being in that bomb Transformers 2?
Oh, you're teaming up on me.
Jazz, you're in top form. I do want to say something about all the performances in that film. We didn't mention Melinda Dillon. By the way, she did want to be with us today, but she wasn't able to, and she sends her very best wishes to us. She was just absolutely so wonderful as the mother who tried to keep peace within the family, make everything come out okay, except with that horrible lamp that she hated. Darren McGavin, I think that was the best performance that he's ever given. I loved the fact that he was the most fierce furnace fighter. Have I got that right, AJ?
The most feared furnace fighter in northern Indiana.
And even the teacher who was so concerned about her students, and how she must have been a great teacher because they teased her a lot. The scene where they put all these fake teeth in their mouths to say good morning to her when she turned around from the chalkboard. She was just wonderful. And that tough Santa Claus, he was perfect. Who played that part, AJ?
Is an actor by the name of Jeff Gillen, who sadly passed away a few years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But he was, you just knew that he hated his job, but he was perfect.
One of the best bad Santas ever in movie. Just the disgruntled guy. He's like, yeah, hey, how's it going, kid? Now go away.
Yeah, get this kid off my lap. Yeah, and he could hardly wait until he was, that the store closed and he didn't have to talk to any more of the little kids. He was very, very funny. Oh my gosh, even though we've extended to 60 minutes, our time is up. It's just gone by too quickly. And I want to thank Julie and Zach and AJ and Nikki and even Jazz and our chatters for making this tribute show so much fun.
We have to end the season with even Jazz. But before we go, I do want to say, because it is the Christmas season, it's been a wonderful year, and I want to wish all of my friends here that do the show with us the merriest of Christmases and a very good, happy, prosperous new year. And everybody who joins us every week to listen to the show, thank you very much for the experience.
Well, well said, Jazz. And we know you mean it, and we love having
even
you
AJ.
On the show. We love having you on the show, even AJ, especially AJ.
I suppose.
Well, this is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout-out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support in connection with our show. Special thanks to all our listeners for tuning in, and I just want our chatters to know how much we appreciate them signing up and participating. And this is our last show for this year, but please come back next year on Tuesday, January 5th, at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, when we'll try, and there's an emphasis on try, to pick the top 10 movies of 2009. Now, I hope AJ is able to join in that, and maybe we should bring first aid kits in case there are any blows exchanged. In the meantime, don't you forget to check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. You can find AJ's wonderful review of A Christmas Story on our site. From all of us at Movie Attic Headquarters, happy holidays, everyone. And now to close the show, as usual, here's AJ Daniels with a song we dedicate to our Blog Talk Radio listeners everywhere.